WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi, so thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another Monday Night Talk. And yes, my name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a fantastic show. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will be speaking with Peter Tedeschi. Peter is running for Congress, the Massachusetts 9th Congressional District, and he's a candidate, a Republican candidate. We'll speak with him about his campaign, why he decided to get involved with politics. Looking forward to that. And then Brian Cook. Now, I think John Valiente may join him. But I got some correspondence from these two gentlemen in regards to some of the questions I put to independent candidates. And so they're like, we should have a discussion. I'm like, okay, we should. And so I'm hoping, now John, I guess, is going to be going to town meeting here in Marshfield and doing a couple of other things. He says he will try to call in. So we hope that John Valiente, if you see him, say, John, you're supposed to be on the radio at 6:40. Brian Cook is supposed to be in studio. Now, I'll tease you with who is going to be on the second hour. But right now, we're going to turn our attention to a good friend who's been in studio before. As we got a full show tonight, and I wish I had more time. But we have Mr. Chuck Giovannetti, who is here to talk to us about upcoming event for the Animal Protection Center located in Brockton. As they're going to be having their second annual Dogtoberfest this coming Saturday. Chuck, how are you?
I'm fine, Kevin. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. If you will, we got limited time. Give folks some of the details of your extravaganza that's coming up this Saturday night.
Well, thank you. As you said, the Animal Protection Center is excited to be hosting our second annual Dogtoberfest. It is this coming Saturday, the 20th, and it is at the Adoption Center over in Brockton on the Eastern Line. This year, we have a great selection of local brewers, 10th District, Barrel House Z, Widowmaker, and 4th Sages. We also have Bridgewater Liquors, and they're all going to be sampling some great craft beers. Plus, food to complement the tastings, a DJ, a live band round out the fun. Everyone will go home with a souvenir APCSM pint glass. And then everything I just mentioned is $40 per person. Additional beer purchases from the brewers will be available. And our website, apcsm.org, has details, more details. You can also purchase tickets on the website. And we have a half-price ticket special for those designated drivers. Obviously, designated drivers, a half-price, you won't be getting the samples, but you'll still be having the fun. APCSM.org, Kevin, is where everyone can find the info and get tickets.
Chuck, thank you so much for at least sharing those details. We will have to have you back on a little bit sooner, as you may or may not know. Normally, we were scheduled to have a slew of political forums. It so happened that things opened up just for tonight for us to do a regular show, and it booked up fast. So we apologize, but we're glad we at least had you come on just for a couple of moments.
Hey, thank you very much. We greatly appreciate you and the folks over at WATD for the support. Hope to see you and everybody else there.
Sounds like a plan. There he is, Chuck Giovannetti with the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass, located at 1175 West Elm Extension in Brockton. Now, I have to turn my focus to what's happening out on the roadways, and it's being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop online at brennansmokeshopma.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford, and Lisa DeMilo awaits me. Lisa, how are things out on the roadways?
Well, hey, Kevin, the expressway south inching along from the tunnel down past South Bay, and you're back in it after Squantum Street right down to the split. Northbound slows approaching the tunnel. Route 3 south delays down past Union Street. Northbound's good. No problems on the bridges either heading on or off Cape. Route 24 south is stop and go from Route 104 down through Raynham, and Route 44 is good. This report is sponsored by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation invites you to take steps for cures at a walk event near you. Get started at cctakesteps.org. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Let's see, what can I say about Brennan's? We have large walk-in humidors. I'm not sure if I can tell you what's inside, but I know they're stocked from the floor to the ceiling. We sell tobacco. I know I can say tobacco. That's about all I'll say about that. We sell pipes, lighters, and accessories. Don't think I can say what they're used for, but I know we sell them. Of course we have a friendly, knowledgeable staff, but only if you remembered your ID. I know I can say that. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. And joining us, our very first guest, as we teased in the opening, is a gentleman who is seeking your vote come November 6th. He is running for the Mass Congressional 9th District. We have Mr. Peter Tedeschi. He is a Republican. Peter, welcome to Monday Night.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here with you.
For folks who don't know who you are, and I'm sure there are many who do.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My wife, Kathy, and I, lifelong residents of the South Shore. I actually grew up in Norwell and currently live in Marshfield. And I was the former president and CEO of my family's business, Tedeschi Food Shops. I was there. Previous to that, I worked in financial services where I was a senior vice president at Putnam Investments most recently. And before that, I was actually an entrepreneur, started one of the first computer companies in the area. So, we love being here on the South Shore. I'm very proud of my time at Tedeschi Food Shops. Thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of we did well. We were picked as the number one chain nationally in 2012. And we support a lot of groups. I mean, when I think about the things I'm probably proudest about, a lot of them have less to do with business, more to do with people. Things like we were the Best Buddies Employer of the Year, and Friendship Home. We won Employer of Friendship Home members. For those of you who don't know, Friendship Home and Best Buddies, two great organizations mm-hmm. that support the development of the disabled. So, and in fact, I still serve on the board of Friendship Home today. But things like that, very proud of, but love this area.
Knowing that you've seen such tremendous success in business, what would make you want to say, I think I want to run for office? What was the appeal?
Sure. Well, you know, I've always had it in my heart to serve. And it's, you know, when you think about it, you think about my family's story. This is an area that's afforded family the opportunity to realize the American dream. Don't get me wrong, through a lot of hard work and some good fortune here and there, but starting with my immigrant grandparents, Angelo and Catherine, that came here at the turn of last century. So first and foremost, this is an opportunity for me to give back to an area that I'm proud to call home and one that has been has really allowed us to realize the American dream. And then secondly, like many in your audience, I'm sure, I'm very concerned with what I see going on in Capitol Hill today, partisan bickering, resulting in a lack of action on behalf of the people. It's one of the reasons why Congress has a dismal 19% approval rating. So we have two options. We can complain about things or we can do something about it.
What was it like to get your campaign up and running? Or have you been somebody who has been behind the scenes of campaigns and you kind of already had an idea?
I know I haven't really been involved, an activist or anything like that. Mm. So this is my first time running. So it was a learning experience. And a lot of it is, you know, I often say, being a good elected official and being a good executive or leader is being self-aware enough to know there's a lot of things you don't know. So I went to people that I knew were more involved. I met with a governor who's endorsed me. We've developed a great relationship. And just people, very candid questions about what does it look like? What should I expect? obviously, I involved my wife in the process, too, because I wanted her to know. I was fortunate, Kevin, I say, I didn't have a primary, but I had to earn one vote. It was the most important. It was hers. So it was just sort of going out, knowing who to speak with, and then sort of assimilating all that. And then my wife and I had a discussion, and she knows this is something that's important to me. And it's one of those things, Kevin, where I know that if I didn't do it, I would regret this the rest of my life. I just don't want to have those type of regrets, wondering what could have been.
What are some of the key issues? I think every opponent, they have those issues that resonate with them. What are the issues that resonate with you?
Well, there's a couple of things. There's, look, the bipartisan, lack of bipartisan collaboration on Capitol Hill is a problem. The gentleman I'm running against, he's not a bad guy. He's just not a strong representative. And, he votes with his own party 95% of the time. That's not good for anyone. He ranks 364th in Congress. That's the bottom 16% on the partisan index rating. We can do much better. We need to do much better. And by the way, he's ranked as the most partisan member of the Massachusetts delegation. So that's an issue there. But then we look at sort of more substantive issues for the people, and we see things when we go around and we visit all the towns in the district, and we talk with first responders, small and large business owners, and just everyday people. We hear things, opioid, obviously a big issue. Yep. I would love to be Governor Baker's partner. He's on the President's Opioid Task Force, by the way. Would love to be his partner on Capitol Hill to help him further the great work he's doing in Massachusetts, including getting folks out of the shadows. And by the way, unfortunately, I had a nephew that passed away from an opioid addiction. He overdosed on heroin, and I've got a sister that's a recovering opioid addict who's been sober now for over 4 years, and she's doing very well. So I know firsthand what this is like. We talk to people, heart-wrenching stories. That's one of the issues. And then we have things like when you look at coastal resiliency. That's a big one, mm-hmm. And especially for an area like ours where of the four towns, Kevin, 80% of them are coastal. We need to do more to shore up our coastlines, seawalls, water mitigation once we have water that's in here. We need to be able to disperse it and get rid of it quickly to protect people's homes, businesses, and keep our community safe.
Well, interesting enough, a gentleman who has sat in on my radio program, been a co-host from time to time, has touted and given updates regards to the National Flood Insurance Program itself.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be done in that area? Because from what I understand, this is a program that just keeps getting continued, and hasn't necessarily seen any kind of long-term modification.
Well, it's like a lot of things. You know, we have a lot of elected officials that like to talk about things. What we need is action. And we need to really take a hard look and force the federal government to take a look at our floodplains, for example. We have a lot of folks that are, they pay extremely high insurance rates because they're in quote-unquote floodplains, yet there hasn't been any flooding in their area in over 100 years. We need to be smart and reasonable and realistic about that. But in other areas, we need to get ahead of the curve, and we need to repair failing seawalls and infrastructure before they actually fail. Right now, we wait for something to collapse before we do anything about it. That's not smart. That's not the way we should do things. People deserve better. Perfect example of infrastructure need. And by the way, these are federal because they deal with the Army Corps of Engineers. It is our federal elected officials that are supposed to be facing off with them, working hand in hand with them to get these things addressed. Things like the Cape Cod bridges. I mean, those things are nearing end of life. What are we doing to make sure those are safe, and what's the plan to replace them? If given the opportunity, and I was fortunate enough to be elected, the people would have a plan in my first term, and would know exactly what's going to happen with those bridges.
You look at the past couple of years under the Trump administration, probably one key issue that a lot of folks still talk about, and I was watching the news this morning, and that is immigration reform, what to do mm-hmm. with folks who are coming into our country. What's your thoughts on that area?
So immigration, I mean, as a country, there are probably few issues more important that we need to get our arms around, and we haven't. Too many elected officials, we've been kicking this can down the road for so long, Kevin, and it's absolutely unacceptable. Recently, my opponent had an opportunity to vote in support of the folks that are our federal agencies on the borders keeping us safe. He didn't vote in support of them, didn't vote against them, he voted present. Now, I can tell you right now, even as CEO of my family's business, If I took a pass on an issue of that type of importance today, family or not, I'd be out of a job tomorrow. That's just unacceptable. He could have voted no. I wouldn't have agreed with him, but I would at least appreciate that he had the attitude to deal with it. Relative to immigration, there's a couple things. First of all, we need to secure our borders. And we can talk about what that looks like, what it's going to cost. We just need to secure our borders, not only for immigration, but to also, when you think about it, help stem the flow of fentanyl, carfentanil, and poison pouring into our country. Number one, once we secure our border, what are we going to do about the folks that are here illegally right now? I'm actually in favor of giving the folks that are DACA recipients a pathway to citizenship. I ask two things. A, they pay their own way. B, they respect our laws. For the adults that came here, perhaps their parents or, let's say, even their grandparents, I'm open to giving them a pathway to permanent residency. They'll never be able to vote, but they'll be able to live here. Ask two things. A, they pay their own way, and B, they respect and obey our laws. But make no mistake about it, there can be no safe harbor for those that come to this country to do us harm. You know, we have too many judges that have been showing leniency on folks that are here illegally, only to have bad things happen after they get out of a short-term prison stint.
Again, we're speaking with Peter Tedeschi. He is a Republican candidate for the Massachusetts 9th Congressional seat, congressional district seat, and now we're sitting here talking about his campaign. He actually will be a part of one of our political forums coming up in the next couple of weeks. I believe it's going to be October 29th. Be sure to check our website, 959watd.com. Check under political, our political coverage as to when we got upcoming forums. There are, I would say, like four or five. We got one tomorrow night as well with the folks running for a couple of open seats on the Rockland Board of Selectmen. Knowing that this could be a very important midterm election, how do you feel about this and feel about the other races that could change Congress or the U.S. Senate?
So there's a lot of discussion of the Republicans going to lose the House, and I'm really focused on this race. And at the end of the day, people often ask, they say, well, if you get elected and the Democrats take the House, how do you feel about that? And, you know, here's the important thing to keep in mind, Kevin. If we're just looking at this as one party or the other party, we're looking at it wrong. That's what's gotten us into the problem we have today. You know, I believe in term limits. I signed a pledge to serve no more than three terms in the lower house, and I push for term limits if elected. I believe if we had term limits, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems we have today. I'm often asked also, what's the number one issue you're going to deal with on day one? Day one, my first objective is to get out and to meet the other folks in Congress across party lines and geographically diverse, because guess what? If we want to get the work of the people on here in the ninth, we need to be able to develop relationships not only across the aisle, but across the country. And that's the type of thing I have. When I was CEO of Tedeschi's, I routinely worked with my largest competitors for the betterment of the entire industry. Wouldn't it be nice to have that type of collaborative effort? So, you know, I don't. We keep looking at this us versus them. Let's just understand this, folks. If we're going to get things done for the people of this district and this country, it's got to be about us collectively. That's how I view the world.
We were talking about the coastal issues. Probably the other thing that I would ask you and know is the fishing industry. I don't know how often you've had to have stations with those folks. I know catch limits it's a big thing, and it's an industry that has been essential for many, many years. What are you hearing from those folks, and what have you said to them that you would like to try to do if you're elected?
Sure. Well, we've actively engaged members of the fishing community. It's a very important industry to this and to this region. In fact, New Bedford, number one fishing port in the country, which is part of the district. The current congressman hasn't done what he needs to do to support them. Whether it's, you know, I'd be fighting to have the Monuments Act, which basically put 5,000 square miles of fishing area off limits to our fishermen. I'd be looking to overturn that. He had an opportunity recently to vote for reauthorization of Magnuson-Stevens Act. Essentially, that helps dictate how limits and species are defined for our fishermen that are out there. He had an opportunity to help promote and support the reauthorization. He voted against it. Now, Steve Lynch, Democrat in the 8th Congressional District, just to the north of us, he voted for it because he knows it's important to our fishermen. He was looking to help do the right thing for our fishermen as opposed to appeasing a certain special interest group, whatever it happens to be. That's the way you need to do it. I spent overnight with a fishing trawler back about a month and a half ago. I learned a lot of very important things about the things that are facing our fishermen and our community. And at the end of the day, you know, fishing is very important to this area, obviously being a coastal community. But when you really sit back, it's not just about the fishing industry, Kevin. It's about the people that that process the fish, that make the nets, that repair the boats. At the end of the day, it isn't just about businesses per se. These are about people trying to put food on their family's table. And we need to be doing a lot more today than we're to help support them. I would give them the support they need and deserve. It's a throwback. It's a very important industry and one that deserves a lot more attention than it's getting today.
Okay, we're speaking with Peter Tedeschi. He is a candidate for the Massachusetts 9th Congressional District seat. Don't forget, the vote coming up November 6th. It's very important you get out there. You look at the current administration that we have in office, and if you look on social media, there's quite a divide. Give me your thoughts on the particular administration, because folks who want to lead others to believe that the individual who is our 45th president isn't necessarily doing his job. But behind the scenes, there's a lot that's been done, especially when it comes to trade, our trade, and our being a global partner. Give me your thoughts on this administration. If you want to talk a little bit about trade.
Sure. There's a lot of things that I think that the president is doing well relative to things like trade. When you take a look at developing a relationship with North Korea, we just had the remains of some of our servicemen returned to us. That is a very good thing. I think he's fighting for us. There's one that can argue that the economy is doing very well. Look at unemployment. So things are going, they're going very well there. We part ways on some other things. That's what people need to understand, is that although I'm a Republican, I will stand with the president when I feel he's doing the right thing and the right thing for the people of this district. Sure. But make no mistake about it, I will be happy to stand against or stand up to the president when I feel he's doing the wrong thing, when I disagree with him on certain things. And there are certain positions he's taken that I disagree on. I would be very vocal about those. Make sure my voice is heard, because this can't be about party. This isn't about partisanship. This really needs to be about the work of the people done. So, look, in these times where I'm disappointed with his tone and temper, there's times he says things he just doesn't need to say. I get that, too, and it's very disappointing. But there are some things I think he's doing that you have to give him credit for. If you're going to be fair and objective, you need to give him credit for it.
Peter, we just have minutes left with you. Again, we thank you for joining us on Monday Night Talk. Anything I haven't asked you, but you kind of, or you feel is essential to at least share with the listeners of this interview?
Sure. I think if people come away with nothing else, what they need to understand is, for me, I'm a person. I'm not a politician. I do not view this as a career. My opponent's been a 41-year career politician. He's already served four terms. He's looking for his fifth. I signed a pledge to serve no more than three and would push for term limits throughout Congress. This says public service. We need more elected officials that are willing just to do the will of the people and work to support the people. I'm going to do what I think is right. And if elected, if that means I serve one term, you know something? I am perfectly fine with that. I can live with that, because at the end of the day, I need to be able to look my constituents, my wife, my children in the eyes and know that I did the right thing. I need to be able to sleep at night. So I don't view this as a career. I view it as a public service. If that means one term, fine. Three, fine. I just want to go and do the work of the people.
And this is an opportunity we've heard from the candidate. We've heard from the gentleman who's had a successful career. What is Peter Tedeschi, the regular guy, like to do? What do you like to do in your spare time?
I have not had a lot of spare time lately.
Understandable.
But when I do, I love to spend time with my family. My wife, Kathy, my children, my granddaughter. I've got a grandson that's coming any day now.
Excellent.
So that's why I like to spend time with my family. I'm very fortunate to be part of a wonderful extended family. The Tedeschis are a group of people that are a great group of folks. I'm blessed. And, so we just enjoy spending time together. And that's, some good downtime. Out fishing, things like that.
And if folks want to find out more about the campaign, if they want to get involved, maybe they might want to donate or want signs, how can they do that?
Donations, lawn signs would be great. We're in the final stretch here.
Sure.
We have an opportunity to win this. Please go to TedeschiForCongress.com, sign up and get involved. I mean, being a part of the process is very important. And I have to tell you, one of the best things about the process, Kevin, has been the fantastic people we've met along the way.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come in here to our radio station. And you're going to do it again on the 29th of October. Part of Uncle Forms, so we'll look forward to seeing you and your opponent in studio as we put those questions to you to kind of find out where you stand on a lot of the issues.
Sounds great, Kevin. Looking forward to it. Thanks for your time.
You got it. There he is, Peter Tedeschi. Get out. Make a difference come November 6th. We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments. I promise you, when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Sheriff Joe McDonald. DA Tim Cruz is recognized amongst America's prosecutors as one of the most innovative and effective district attorneys. He is tough with gang and gun violence, but also compassionate in recognizing that some offenders need treatment and renewed educational opportunities in lieu of incarceration. That's why DA Tim Cruz has been endorsed by Plymouth County police chiefs, detectives, and police unions. Plymouth County is facing serious criminal justice issues. We need a proven public safety leader. Vote to re-elect District Attorney Tim Cruz, the only choice of law enforcement. Paid for by the committee to elect District Attorney Tim Cruz.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We are back. Thank you very much to Peter Tedeschi for being our guest. Coming up at hour number two, we have Casey Sherman, Dave Wedge, author of the inside story on Tom Brady's fight for redemption. But that's not why they're joining me. They're actually going to chat a little bit about an article that they did in Boston Magazine in regards to Peter Marciano. Who is Peter Marciano? Well, he is a relative, direct descendant of Rocky Marciano, the Proctor Blockbuster. And they're going to tell this story as they're going to discuss the story that they wrote, the piece, the tragic piece they wrote about Peter, as Peter was not only a great athlete, but he unfortunately succumbed to what a lot of folks are battling with these days, and that is drug addiction. And I'm looking forward to talking with Casey and Dave. Dave, of course, being a Brockton guy, we know the story about Marciano, so we'll look forward to that. And then another Brockton guy, Newbie Rattel and Will Maduro. They're in to talk about their new documentary, Protect, Serve, and Care. I had a chance to see it. I will give you my thoughts on it, and we will discuss. It ought to be good. I might even ask Brian Cook to stick around for it. He's my guest right now. Brian's my guest on the premise that he had sent me an email. We've had a lot of dialogue, myself and Brian, as we've done this thing called The Gloves Are Off. He and another gentleman, Stephen Gill, who is a candidate for state senate. Mr. Cook was the one who came up with the idea. We've had some good conversations. So I thought I would include Mr. Cook in this conversation, because he also sent me something in regards to the independent candidate. What does that mean? Mr. Cook? Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Before I start talking about this very exciting topic that no one ever talks about, it's nice that you're doing it, I did want to comment on the fact that I was in court this morning, and the court officer happened to have the name Marciano on his chest. So I asked what his first name was, and he said Rocky.
Oh, so that's Peter's son.
Yeah.
Peter Sr.'s son.
Terrific kid.
Peter Sr., of course, a younger brother of Rocky Marciano.
And he looked like he could go 15 rounds and probably come out on top. But Brockton has a great tradition of fighters with Robbie Sims and Marvin Hagler and, of course, The Rock.
Bravo with the Robbie Sims.
And if you haven't seen the statue of him at the field, it's something for the people of Brockton to be very proud of.
Interesting enough, I will say this, is that I was on the I was at that time when that was coming together. The thought was is to put that statue in downtown Boston. There was a push, and then Brocktonians like, oh, wait. Rocky Marciano is known from, he proudly would say, he's from Brockton, Massachusetts. Why would you want to do that? So there's a little known fact that the Jose Suleiman, who was the World Boxing Council president at the time, they were going to, like a little olive branch, they were actually going to put, as he would say, a boost in right where the city hall is. That was the thought. And then somewhere, somehow, the tide changed and they decided to put it in Brockton. Right. And then the next conversation happened because then it was like, where should this go? The thought was to put it in downtown Brockton. They were going to put it behind the parking garage over by City Hall. People were like, you can't see it. And the only way you'd be able to see the statue's face is if you went to the third floor of the parking garage. Who wants to do that? So they settled on putting it outside of the stadium that bears his name, Rocky Marciano Stadium, up at Brockton High School.
It is amazing. I'll tell you the most amazing part of it, none of us really focus on this who are of this generation, but Muhammad Ali was 6'4", 230 pounds. Foreman was 6'5", 6'6", maybe bigger,
mm-hmm.
and a huge man. Gronk is 6'7", 275. Marciano was under 6 foot.
Yep.
And not 200 pounds.
He was a buck 90, buck 98,
to,
somewhere around buck 88.
Think about somebody winning 46 fights with that kind of build and that kind of background.
He was 49-0.
He was 49-0.
49-0. Although you if you speak to Floyd Mayweather, he might tell you that, you know, he's the one who's the undefeated champion because he's 50-0.
We're talking politics tonight, so I'm looking forward to the politician Pacquiao coming back and giving Mr. Mayweather a lesson in humility. But speaking of humility, independence.
Please.
The interesting part of independence, especially in Massachusetts, is that nobody knows what they are. Effectively, we have Republicans and Democrats. And at one time, we had the Bull Moose Party, and we had other parties out there. We had Mr. Roosevelt, Mr. Perot, and other people who ran for president on a third-party
platform.
Can't talk
here.
I'm sorry?
Can't talk here.
There you go. But here in Massachusetts, we had Kennedy Democrats, which most of us in my generation followed. We had Republicans from 1850 to 1925. So we had a WASPy, Protestant, white male group running the state until the Catholic influx, the Irish, came along and changed politics in Massachusetts, and then everyone was a Kennedy Democrat. And part of that was a large group of immigrants and working class people. And that's changed. Ronald Reagan came along, ran for president. Doug Flutie supported him. BC kids signed up to be Republicans. And now you find union people from Marshfield, Hull, Weymouth, all of a sudden becoming Republicans. So in a country situation in which 27% are Democrats, 27% Republicans, and 44% independents, we have similar numbers in Massachusetts. Yet we don't have too many independent office holders. And that's what's fascinating about the whole process.
Is it because there isn't a general assembly, there isn't an assembly to caucus, there isn't an organized mass?
Well, the point you just brought up, I think, is the key to the whole situation, the ability to caucus. Anyone can talk to anyone else. The problem that I had, and we just saw it in the Kavanaugh hearings, is when people vote for their party. They don't vote for a person. They don't vote for an idea. They don't vote for a cause. They don't vote for something they believe in. They just say to the party, what do you want me to do? I'll vote with you. Mr. Tedeschi just raised that about Mr. Keating. We saw it with the Republicans and Kavanaugh. Seriously, Senator Collins, you don't think anything went wrong there? You don't think, even if he didn't do a thing wrong, is that who you really want in the Supreme Court with Frankfurter and Brandeis and people of that caliber, Oliver Wendell Holmes? I don't think so.
We're going to add another voice to this conversation, as I promised, to Mr. Valiente, who John Valiente, who is somewhere in Marshfield. John, thank you for calling in, sir.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Hey, don't forget to say hi to Brian Cook, who's here, too. Hey,
Brian, yeah, thanks. Brian, thanks.
Hey, John, I'm excited you're on. I was thinking, since I'm at a radio station, about that great song, Where Have All the Independents Gone?
Yeah, you're right, yeah. A sign, everywhere a sign.
But, guys,
I'm here outside of town meeting in Marshfield, so I can only talk for a minute. My daughter's going to sing God Bless America here, so...
Awesome.
But... You know, I wanted to talk, Kevin, and I hope you didn't take it the wrong way.
No.
You know, I think we need to give anybody that runs as an independent or third party, folks need to give them a chance because things are changing, Kevin. They are. You know, 55, whatever, we could argue about the percentages, but 55% are independent, unenrolled folks right now in Massachusetts. And that's going on in the country, too. And one reason why Trump got elected was because people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Now, I didn't vote for Trump, but something's happening and people want some change. And I would just suggest to all you listening to, Kevin, all your thousands of listeners,
yes,
if they see an independent on the ballot, give them a chance, see what they're about. Because most of us are independent. And Kevin, you know what that means?
What does that mean?
Mostly, most independents are fiscally conservative, socially moderate, and that's a real good place to be. I'm proud that I've been independent ever since I was able to vote. And there's a lot of people like me, Kevin. Most young people, they're not registering what their parents did or their grandparents. They're registering as independents, unenrolled, and I'm proud to do it. And I'm proud to, and I want to try to help lead this thing because we need a real independent organization in Massachusetts. Now, we had something going 10 years ago, and we helped form this thing, the Massachusetts Independent Party.
Yep.
But Brian needs to get on. We all need to get on board. People can run for office. It's one of the greatest things they can do, but we need to organize an independent effort. If we're going to change things in the country, we can't just settle for the Democrats and Republicans.
Well, John, let's push it even further, okay? Let's forget about the parties in total. Let's talk about voting for the person. Let's talk
That's
about
what people should be doing, and nationally especially.
They should be looking at the candidates. They should be seeing who encompasses their values, who will get the job done, versus who's just going to vote the party line, who's just going to try to get reelected.
That's the issue here. The money, the influence that these people are doing. I was never a big fan of term limits, but you know what? You know, maybe we should have something where people can't serve for 20 years. That's not what this is about.
Well, let me tell you the crazy idea I have. We should ask every politician to show us their net worth when they enter the office.
Yeah, I don't know.
Their net worth when they leave the office. Because too many people aren't running for office to serve the public. They're running to serve themselves.
So the biggest thing I want to say, guys, the biggest thing, because I got to go. I'm going to see my daughter.
Sure.
But
Don't take a knee, by the way. Do not take a knee.
Yeah, no. If you see someone on the ballot that's independent, unenrolled, third party, give them a chance, people, because most of us are that, and that's a good place to be. And, Kevin, I'd love to come on. You know, I know you got all these interviews now and in the debates and stuff right now leading up to the election, but at some point I want to come in for the full time because there's a story here and it needs to be told.
Well, what's your understanding of the full time? Because the way the show is segmented, the most time you would get would be a half an hour. It wouldn't be the entire 2 hours.
Give me a couple weeks. I'd love to come on with you. You know, me and you can talk about this. I'd love to do it.
I would have to have my attorney Brian Cook here with me.
John, I'd love to spend some time with you. This is a great topic, and I am very, very excited because I'm supporting an independent candidate for the state Senate.
Yeah, well, me too. So listen. We need Stephen Gill. People, give him a chance. Nathaniel Powell. Give them a chance. There's others. There's more this year than probably in 10 years running as unenrolled or independent folks.
So, people,
it's a chance. And thanks, guys. We'll talk to you.
Thank you, John. There he is. John Valiente, joining us and calling in. Here's what I want to say in regards to my thoughts and my opinion in regards to an independent candidate. I am all for the premise of voting for or picking the person. Are we calling Domino's? Okay, thank you. I'm all for voting for the person, not voting for the party. But we have gotten into this habit, this trend, since the formation of this country, of siding with, you know,
the popular group, whether it was the Republicans back in the day to...
You're hitting on it, right? The key, and this is what they're talking about now nationwide, is the difference between the populist and the elitist.
Yep.
And at one point in time, elitists were Republicans. Now, with Mr. Trump...
It's a flip.
And now, all of a sudden, liberal Democrats are considered elitist. But you're right. We should be looking at the person, not the party, because the parties, sort of like what happened to unions over the course of time, became an establishment. They weren't just individuals running. And what John pointed out, which I think is key, everyone who runs for office should be celebrated, because it's not easy. I did it. It wasn't fun. And I lost the election largely because the caucus, the party, decided I wasn't democratic enough. And that's a mistake, because you have to look at the person and who can win. There's a reason for why the South Shore, which was the most heavily Democratic district in the state, is now the most heavily Republican. And that was Bob Hedlund, because Bob appealed to a group of people, and he brought Patrick along, and I want to address that in a minute. But the issue becomes, is that the best we can do? Is that what the party's telling us, or is that what someone else told us? Make the decision yourself. As Thomas Jefferson said, the most important thing is an informed citizenry. Otherwise, we get what we deserve.
Well, here's my thought, and I feel that if there's going to be another party or another assembly of individuals, that they should be part of a process. Not a matter of someone who's able to go on to the final decision, that they should be a part of the primary process. That they should be. If you are not somebody who is with one of the two or three or four primary parties or notable parties that are on a ballot, whether it's presidential, whether it's for a state ballot, there should be some kind of a decision on those who are running, as not somebody who just goes on to that final ballot. That they should have, that there should be some kind of a...
I agree completely, and that's really what we should.
So the strongest will come out, and you know that the individuals who are running for office aren't just in it just to get press or to take numbers away from one said candidate to the other.
Exactly. So let's back up. Let's really talk about this. Most people don't know what an independent is. Most people don't know what an unenrolled is. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what a Democrat and a Republican is. Because let's be honest.
It's changed.
Charlie Baker's a Democrat. Mitt Romney was a Democrat. There are other people who ran for office solely because if you run as a Republican in Massachusetts, you can't win. And I'm sure Patrick and even Bob decided, I can't win as a Democrat, so I'll jump to the other side. You've got 7 Republican senators in a 40-person House.
Well, better than it was a couple of years ago.
It is much better.
Much better.
They've doubled their size, but the reality is you can't get anything.
They're no longer caucusing in a phone booth.
I agree. But whenever a question is asked of Mr. O'Connor, his response is all the money that he's brought to the district. Not with 7 votes you didn't. And I think it's time for us to figure out what does Pat O'Connor really stand for, because he's never told anybody. We don't know what he's fought for. He's never owned a home. He's never had a child. He's never had someone die in his arms. He's never gone to war. He voted for the bump stock, which means he supports guns. He's never shot a gun. He voted for the millionaire's tax. He's not a millionaire. Okay. That's not a Republican policy. I want someone to ask him 2 questions. What do you care about, and where did you really go to school? Because he did not graduate from college, yet he's told the electorate that he did. I want some honesty, and then I'll believe.
But he's an incumbent at this point in time.
And let's go there. Incumbency. What a wonderful thing. Win
his
the
name
job,
recognition.
Keep it for life. And if your name was Kennedy, my God, you just win automatically. You don't even have to have any qualifications.
I don't know if that's the case anymore.
Not anymore. There's one left. And maybe when that's done, we can move on to other candidates. I love the fact that someone named Tedeschi is running. That's a South Shore name. The fact that he had the courage to run is magnificent. But I'll tell you, I started out in looking at this race and looking at the people who are running, and I found myself not being a big fan of Stephen Gills. And I wondered if an independent could win. Now I think an independent can. I think Mr. Hedlund and Mr. O'Connor have split their alliances.
Sure.
Mr. Hedlund just said that the town of Weymouth was run terribly for years, and Pat O'Connor ran the town of Weymouth from the city council seat. You've got someone running for office who's a doctor, which is wonderful that she's doing it, but as I listened to her on the debate, I felt like she was going to give me a lollipop, because she was speaking to me like I was a child in a pediatrician's office. And then there's Gil, a naval officer, a person who took on his country, who was literally put in shackles and put in a cell because he wouldn't do things against the people interned in Guantanamo with several generals. But that's a tough character who I want representing me up on Beacon Hill. That's an independent. And he thinks like an independent, and he's making independent decisions. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but what has he done as far as campaigning goes? And what if a lot of the the struggle.
You just hit on a great point.
That's the struggle. What is he doing?
He's being celebrated and attacked because he didn't raise any money. When you raise money, you're basically having your vote paid for. Okay, Patrick took $20,000 from the people that are ruining the Weymouth Naval Air Station, and he said he'd give it back. Sorry, too late.
Then tell me how do you get name recognition unless you repeatedly run? I mean, it's...
I ran. I raised money. I didn't raise a lot. I ran enough to run. You don't need to raise $50,000, $100,000 to run for a state Senate seat. It only pays $50,000 or $60,000. Why are you going to spend $300,000 or $1 million at an office that pays $100,000 unless you think you're going to make it up long term?
Sounds vaguely like Brewster's Millions.
What?
Remember Richard Pryor? You ever see Richard Pryor?
Okay.
Brewster's Millions? And he's like, why would these people raise all this money?
Exactly.
And he actually, in order, the whole idea was for him to get inheritance, but he had to spend $30 million.
Think about our friends the Clintons. Broke when they were in office. Multimillionaires now. Yeah. There's something, you have to ask some questions as to where did the money flow in from. So let's go back to this race. You've got three people running for office, and none of them have really said why. That's what I want to hear. Why are you leaving a medical practice to run for office?
The clock is ticking, so...
And we need to hear that. With Gil, why are you leaving the Navy? Why are you leaving your legal practice to run for office? Well, in his case, he can do both. And maybe Ms. McBrien could do the same thing. Patrick has only worked for
the
state.
Was a question that was asked during our forum as to...
I know you did, and that was wonderful. She gave a nice answer.
She did.
She wanted to help people. She wanted to go on. With Patrick, I see a guy who's only worked for the state. He's never had a job other than one that we paid for. I think he did a great job for Weymouth. I'd love to keep him there as a city councilor. But I think we can do better, and we can do better on every level, including the man who's running our country. Someone needs to ask him to be presidential. I don't have a problem with his politics. I don't have a problem with what he's doing for the economy. I don't have what he's doing for unemployment. But it's an embarrassment for someone to speak like that, to be doing little Twitter votes off of the throne in the middle of the night. It's ridiculous to listen to him attack someone who's talking about sexual abuse. Time to go, Doug. Time to go.
There he is, Mr. Brian Cook, a reoccurring guest. I do invite you, if you want it, you're welcome. When we do the police, the documentary, you want to hang out for that coming
Terrific.
Up at 7:30, you can.
That would be wonderful.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, good friend Casey Sherman, waiting in the wings, warming up the bullpen, as we'll talk a little bit about an article that he has done, he and Dave Wedge penned for the Boston Magazine, right here on 95.9 WATD. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WMEX Boston, and 95.9WATD.com.
I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance? Good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim, I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock, excellent.
All right, Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group, I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all.
My dad did a great job.
1-888-64-TINY. Just call.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Second hour of Monday Night Talk. It's a great conversation coming up. Later this hour, Nubi Rito, Protect, Serve, and Care. We'll talk about his new documentary, which is going to be hitting the theater in Dedham coming up in November. But first, good friend who is on the author's injured reserve right now.
That's right. I have a clipped wing, Kevin.
He's got a clipped wing, but let me tell you, it's good to have you in studio. He's doing a lot of work. We're here to talk. Well, first, after last night's football game, I was thinking of you during the football game.
Yeah.
Knowing that your best-selling book, Tom Brady, 12. Inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. How's everything going with the book?
Oh, I mean, the book has been phenomenal. You know, it just skyrocketed to near the top of the New York Times bestseller list right off the gate because we were really, you know, not only weaving an interesting tale about Deflategate, but really, you know, breaking news and then predicting how this story was ultimately going to play out, the relationships between Brady, Kraft, and Belichick. And we're still seeing that unfold.
It's evolving,
exactly. Yeah. I was watching that game like you were last night, and you know, it was interesting because it did remind me of the fourth quarter against the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, where Brady just summoned that, 30-year-old energy and that determination and that will and got that ball to Gronk for the game-winning field goal. Amazing.
I have to say is that it's interesting that every time I turn around and I see something new on social media that you are working on, just how much work you put in yourself and also the folks that you work with, Dave Wedge, another guy that you've teamed up with for this book and also for the article that we're going to talk a little bit about that's in the Boston Magazine in regards to Peter Marciano, who is a descendant of the Brockton blockbuster, Rocky Marciano, the only undefeated champion of heavyweight boxing.
49-0. Rocky is one of the looming legends in not only Massachusetts sports, but American and world sports. It's a name that's synonymous with the fighting spirit all around the world, but you know, especially in the city of Brockton, which you've got the 25-foot statue of Rocky towering over the town. It looks like something out of the old Soviet Empire, if you will. You know, those old statues. It's the largest statue of any sports figure anywhere in the United States, and it's a real proud moment, obviously, about a man that instilled that pride into that rugged city of Brockton, the
blue
old shoe city, blue collar city. So imagine growing up as a Marciano in the city of Brockton. It's like being a Kennedy in Hyannisport or in Washington, D.C. You know, obviously opportunities are given, but, respect is reserved, and there's a great deal of pressure on somebody to be successful. We tell a story about Rocky's nephew, Peter Marciano, in the current issue of Boston Magazine. For those who may remember Peter in the city of Brockton, everybody does, but here on the South Shore, Peter was a Brockton football legend in the 1980s, became a college football legend at the University of Iowa, played a year in the pros in Europe, came back to Brockton and was very civically minded, became a member of the school committee, a member of the Brockton City Council, fought for his city, but he was also fighting against a demon that was much more fearsome than any Rocky had ever faced in the ring, and that fearsome foe was drug addiction.
Yeah, I was actually working for another radio station when the news broke down. It was very, very quietly said that it had happened,
they didn't know how he passed away,
uh-huh.
but sources, people that I knew who knew the inside, how what PETA was struggling with, what his missus was struggling with.
Correct.
They had two young children.
Yeah.
It was kind of sad, and it was something that it was a hush because, again, you have a proud family.
You have a proud family, and, you know, it's interesting that the Marcianos, when we worked with Peter's brother, Stephen, and Peter's father,
awesome.
Peter Sr., who's an amazing man, on this story, and, you know, they've come full circle. They really want to lift the stigma of drug addiction and get Peter's story out there because it's a cautionary tale that could literally happen to anyone. It has happened to anyone. There's not any, you know, anyone that has not been affected by the epidemic of addiction here in the United States, whether it's a brother or a cousin or just a best friend or somebody you know has lost that battle. Peter fought a 15-round fight with this addiction, yeah. and ultimately he did lose it. And it's interesting, we talk about how not only, you know, his fall, but his rise in something that happened to him while he was a football player. Here's a kid who never did drugs. You know, he may have had a couple beers with his buddies at Brockton High School or at the University of Iowa, but he was a kick and punt returner, much like Julian Edelman, yep. much like Wes Welker. These yep. small guys who had to be a missile fired into the teeth of the defense,
yep.
and he was fearless, much like his uncle. And playing at the University of Iowa, where Uncle Rocky was killed in a plane crash in 1969. There's yep. a lot of metaphors in this story and how and why Peter's life unfolded the way it did. But when he was a junior or a senior in college, he blew out his knee, he hurt his shoulder. He's in the hospital recuperating from a surgery, and suddenly a nurse and doctor prescribe him Vicodin and Percocet. And, you know, he immediately gets hooked and then eventually graduates to heroin.
And what's interesting is you're telling a story that we're a lot of families are dealing with here, not only in the South Shore, not only across the Commonwealth, but across the country, that it's as simple as a lot of folks want to demonize and say, oh, it's the bad individual, you know, the kid who didn't want to play sports or who wasn't a straight A student. You don't hear that anymore. You know that it's somebody, that anybody from any walk of life, if there's an injury or they, it's opioids. It's from something that's prescribed that can trigger it in yeah. certain people.
Right, right. I mean, the doctors and the nurses clearly didn't know they were, you know, handing out little tablets of heroin when Peter was a junior and senior in college. And immediately he gets hooked. And then he's fighting this battle, but what I admire about Peter is he never gave up, and that he was incredibly civic minded. That he went back to Brockton, the city that he loved, and he, you know, became a city councilor, and he wanted to become a politician. He wanted to become a U.S. senator. He could recite speeches that JFK had given in his 1960 presidential campaign. So here's a guy that had a lot of knowledge, that had a lot of pride and a lot of smarts, but he had this big gorilla on his back. And it's interesting, you know, we talk about the stigma and how it's, you know, now being lifted. You read an obituary today about somebody that had succumbed to opioid addiction, and it's right there in the obituary. Their parents want the public to know, this is my beautiful daughter. This is my beautiful son. And yes, they had a disease not unlike, you know, cancer or some other life-threatening illness. Now, granted, you know, you have to be able to take that drug in the first place to get to that point. But ultimately, you know, it is a disease. It's a disease that I faced with my own family, and I've seen it with my own two eyes. And it's just, you know, we want to tell the story and show that, you know, there are people like Peter who aren't, you know, in somebody's gutter or, you know, things like that. These are people with pride, families, and it's a tragic thing.
Before we go to our caller, you wanted to chime in real
quick?
Brian Cook's still hanging in, as he's going to be part of our the discussion with Nubitz and Rateau.
Well, I just wanted to thank Casey for writing this story, because as we're starting to figure out, in the comment that he just made about people actually putting it in the obituaries, for years it was considered that you could keep it out of your community, you could keep it out of your family, you could keep it out of a socioeconomic group. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a classic case. I went to college with Peter Colombo, Peter Marciano's cousin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I worked with his other cousin, Chuck, who's a Armand, his name was, but who's a lawyer now up in the North Shore. This is a tremendous family, tremendous support. So it's not as if somehow someone failed him. It was that he was given something that was stronger than he was. And it was a demon that he fought, but eventually succumbed to.
Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very well said, because, again, we talk about family support.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody that I've met that has had a relative succumb to this disease or battling this disease, you know, the families don't shun them, you know, like they may have done 30, 40 years ago.
No.
You know, now it's really the family that has to go through this. And you know, they're battling the addiction alongside somebody like Peter Marciano.
That's right. And it's interesting. You talked about Peter's aspiration politically. I lived on the west side. I actually lived on the Brockton-Easton line. And a very nice home. I actually lived right across the way from J.J. Lyons.
Sure.
The gentleman who's on the phone right now probably knows exactly who I'm talking about. But J.J. Lyons, who you know, was a city official. And Peter and these two individuals walk up. This is when he was out campaigning.
Uh-huh.
And he used a very quiet street that I lived on. And I'm working on my vehicle, just doing a little bit of maintenance. And Peter startled me, and I had a wrench in my hand. I go, "What do you want? What can I do? He goes, "Hey, I'm cool. I'm running for city council."
Yeah.
But the two guys he had with him, you would think that, you know, he's, you know, they're going to kind of muscle me. But
right.
But Peter was kind enough to kind of, and that was my first time actually having a conversation. Mm-hmm. Again, I grew up in Brockton, but I didn't have a lot of interaction with the Marcianos, so to speak, especially where I think Peter was. He may have been later. I think I want to say maybe 86, 87.
Yeah, well, he was there. Class of 85 at Brockton.
85, right.
Interesting.
And so now, with no further ado, your partner.
My partner in crime.
Partner in crime in a number of projects, including this one we're talking about, and a true Brocktonian, even though he's not there. He doesn't live there at the moment. Dave Wedge joins the conversation. Dave, how are you?
Hey, good evening, guys. How are you?
We've already started the conversation without you, my friend.
That's okay. I apologize for being a couple minutes late, and sorry I couldn't be down there in person tonight.
You know what this means now. You're going to have to bring us George's Pizza next time you do come down here.
No, Cape Cod.
Really?
You like George's?
Well, I like George. I'll tell you why I like George's. I love the cod. The cod's hands down the best. But George's, it's not only are you eating, but you're enjoying a museum.
That's true. I do love George's. I've always loved it.
See, I knew you'd see it my way.
My friends, you know, the Tartaglia family.
Yep. Hank and Charlie.
Great friends of Rocky. In fact, one of the brothers, Snap Tartaglia, was one of Rocky's cornermen.
Yep. And oddly enough, and this is something I didn't bring up, and I wanted to wait till Dave was on. Peter Marciano also used to do a very, very wildly popular sports show on WBET back
right.
in the day.
Yep.
And I was actually on it once.
He and Hank, when they would go at it, you couldn't understand them. Because they would just scream it. And Peter would be screaming at Hank. You don't know what you're talking about.
it's like, right.
Well, my favorite Hank Tartaglia story was one that I wrote for the Herald years ago when he challenged Menino to a charity boxing match.
I remember
over
that.
Over the name City of Champions, because when the Red Sox broke the curse, Menino called Boston the City of Champions, and obviously everyone in Brockton knows that there's only one City of Champions, and it's Brockton.
Right.
And Hank. I did a hilarious story with Hank on the front page of the Boston Herald with boxing gloves and said, "Fight me for it, Menino."
But to your point, I mean, George's is a shrine.
Menino was unavailable for comment.
Yeah,
I have to ask both of you, what was it like? What was it like for you to write this? Because I know how hard it was for the family to tackle this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when I had heard that you guys were going to, this was going to be your next endeavor, I actually sent a text to Dave telling him about a documentary that was put together that Steve was a part of. And it seemed as though that was the beginning of the family starting to have conversations about what was going on and wanting to not have others go through what they were going through or what they went through.
Well, you know, Casey, you know, really saw this story, as he always does, from, you know, from 30,000 feet, where, you know, I was kind of very close to the story with Stephen being a good friend of mine. And you know, I knew Peter and I watched what happened to him. And I knew there was a story there. But, you know, Casey has a great way of seeing these things that I don't and vice versa, which is why we work together. So
you guys are a great team.
You know, for this one here, you know, really for me, it was about making sure the family wanted to do it and they were okay with us doing it. And, you know, Stephen being out doing his speaking stuff really, you know, made it a natural story to tell, you know, because Peter, you know, Stephen's talking about his brother all the time and people need to hear this message. So I think it was getting the family's buy-in first, and then second of all, just doing justice to a huge, you know, really Brockton legend like Peter. And I think, you know, I think between Casey and I and all the interviews we did for this piece and, you know, the great editing we got on the piece from the editor over there at Boston Magazine, Chris Vogel, I think that, you know, the piece came out great, and I think it is a great tribute to Peter.
And it's a great tribute to his family as well. Sat down with Peter Sr. You know, we spent about 2.5 hours together at his condo in Plymouth. He's just a sweet, sweet man, and he told me about the moment where Peter told him that he had injected himself with heroin for the first time.
Wow.
You know, he had graduated from prescription drugs to heroin, and he was with Hank at the time. They were at a Dunkin' Donuts in Brockton, and Hank is crying, as is Peter Sr., and Peter Sr. just looks at Peter Jr. and says, "What now, Peter? What can we do now?" And Peter Sr. told me, he said, "That was the worst moment in my life." He said, "I lost my brother in a plane crash in 1969.
Right.
He's dealt with tragedy before, you know, and he's even equating this to Peter Jr.'s death. He goes, "Casey, the day he told me that he was using heroin was the worst day of my entire life." And then when Peter Jr. died, you know, Peter Sr. wasn't waiting up for that phone call anymore.
Yeah. And Kevin, if I could just jump in to kind of explain, you know, the real answer to your question is that, you know, the Marciano family is they've always been notoriously private. You know, they don't really, you know, air their dirty laundry.
Right.
And that's always, you know, that was really, and that's kind of a theme of the story. It you know, the family admits that may have contributed to what happened to Peter, because he carried around so much shame. He was so embarrassed of sullying his family name that it made his depression and his cycle of addiction even worse. And really, you know, the family, they did everything they could for Peter. They're speaking out now because they want to let everyone know that, look, this can happen to any family. If it can happen to ours, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, they had such a great support network. You know, Elise, you know, Peter's siblings, Elise, Rocky, and Steven.
Yep.
And the parents are just salt of the earth. They're just the nicest people you'll ever meet, you know, and they've all got good jobs, and they all have their lives together, and they do things in the community. And Peter was the same way. He got into politics because he wanted to serve the city that he loved. And to see a guy like him with every opportunity succumb to this disease just shows you how evil and indiscriminate it is.
And it's interesting you say that, you know, other than being a politician, if you ask Brocktonians, you know, his uncle was a guy who loved playing baseball, and Peter was one of, hands down, one of the best umps the area,
yeah.
One of the best. And I speak to folks who do it for regularly, saying how much they miss a guy like Peter, because Peter was... He was great on the diamond.
Yeah, he was named Umpire of the Year for a couple of years. I mean, he had real pride in that. And that was a bonding mechanism between Peter Sr. and Peter Jr.
Sure.
Because Peter Sr. had played minor league baseball. So they really, you know, they were a baseball family as much as they were a football family, as much as they were a boxing family. And, you know, Peter Sr. was so prideful just in talking about how his son was such a great umpire and a great mentor for kids, even while he was battling this insidious disease.
Dave, did you want to chime in?
No, I would just agree. I mean, you know, you know, another thing that I loved about writing this story is, you know, it was to be honest with you, Kevin, you know me pretty well at this point. It was a lot of pressure. I mean, Casey can attest to this, that, you know, I was just really concerned. I didn't want to disappoint the family or the people of Brockton, because I just know how protective we are of one another. And you know, but everyone you talk to, you know, not everybody loved Peter. There were people that thought he was cocky, and people that thought he was that maybe he was a little full of himself and that sort of thing. But
yeah.
Anyone that you talk to in Brockton, even the people that didn't like him, will admit he did everything he could to be a good person, and he did everything he could to make that city better. And that's the real legacy of Peter Marciano, is that he lived for his city, and he lived to make that city proud. And that's really what, you know, City of Champions and Brockton is really all about to me.
What have you heard from folks who have read the piece that you've done, Casey and Dave?
Yeah, first and foremost, Stephen and Marciano, Peter's brother, and Peter Senior, just were blown away by the piece, and thought it was well told, and thought we captured Peter's fighting spirit. And then everybody that we've shared this story with makes that connection to somebody in their own family, and says, you know, this is very similar to what, yep, you know, we either fought for that person or continue to fight to this day.
It's interesting, you know, I'm reading the story as I'm listening here, and one of the things that jumps out of the story, and then Casey just mentioned it, is that it's about Peter, but it's also about his family.
Absolutely.
And Steve Carell has a movie coming out in a few weeks called Beautiful Boy, which is all about dealing with a father and son, and people think about the person who has the addiction and who passes on. And then we have to reflect back on those that are left behind and what they have to deal with. This is a magnificent story in bringing that issue out.
Go ahead, Dave.
They talk about it all the time. The big saying in the recovery community is that it's a family disease. And, you know, Casey and I have personal experience with this stuff, and we have professional experience with this stuff. And, you know, your point is well taken, that, you know, it's the addict certainly suffers, but the people around them suffer just as bad and oftentimes worse. And certainly that was the case with the Marciano family. If you read the piece, you know, Stephen has to live with the fact that, you know, the last act that he did with his brother was disinvited him to Christmas. And that broke Peter's heart. But Peter also knew that Stephen was right, because he was sick and he wasn't doing anything to help himself and get better. And Stephen knew that the only way to get the message across to his brother was to take away the thing that he loved, which was being with his family at the holidays. And, you know, unfortunately, Peter died shortly after that. And Stephen has to live with that, you know, and that's tremendous pain for him. And, again, he has no regrets. He did everything that he thought was right and everything he could to help his family and his brother, but it's still a source of pain for him.
I think people have to realize that when you're talking about addiction, when you're talking about somebody who is part of that, that there's so many dynamics to someone who is, A, first off, the tough love. I get the tough love thing, mm-hmm, because there comes a certain point in time where you run out of ways to try to put your loved one back on the right track and the course to sobriety.
That's right.
And because there's a lot that goes on to it. It because a lot of times it's not the person who may be going and taking your spare change or pawning something or doing drugs after coming out of rehab. It's the addiction. And I don't think people realize that.
Yeah. At the end of the day with this story, this is really a story about the pharmaceutical industry making commercial-grade heroin,
yep,
and marketing it as painkillers for athletes. And that's been going on for 40 years now. And this is the result. You know, Peter's just one of millions, unfortunately, that, you know, got injured playing sports or working or something, got hooked on this stuff that the doctors told them was okay, and it wasn't okay. And you're seeing lawsuits all over the country now. Mara Healy's filed one against, here in Massachusetts, against Purdue Pharma, and she should. And everyone that has lost a family member to addiction to these medications should be outraged. And really, you know, that's not to take the onus off the addict, because some people get hooked through recreational use, but there are a lot of people who purely got addicted to this stuff through no choice of their own. And that's really sad.
Did you want to add on to that?
No, I think you you hit the nail on the head right there, Dave. And one of the things that Dave and I are looking at right now for our next partnership together, writing partnership, would be to expand on this story nationally, especially with the NFL, how the NFL doctors have been prescribing, painkillers and very addictive drugs to players just to get them back on the field for generations. And, you know, they're creating, you know, loaded weapons. And when these players are drummed out of the NFL because of injury, because of age, they have no recourse. They have no safety net to protect them or to protect the public or their families. And we're seeing tragedies, as Dave mentioned, sparking up across the United States right now. And nobody is being held accountable for this.
And I want to kind of add in is besides the Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey getting involved in filing lawsuits against Big Pharma, you've got communities that are also doing the same thing and filing suit against Big Pharma, seeking damages in order to be able to recoup in regards to addiction and the monies that are paid out on a municipal level when it comes to dealing with folks who are addicted or having to have a proper police force, Narcan, being able to have our emergency responders, our first responders, be able to tackle this and any other drug, whether it's carfentanil, fentanyl,
right,
stuff like that.
Stuff like that. There were 60,000 overdoses in Massachusetts last year.
Right.
If that doesn't reek of an epidemic, if that doesn't, equate to, I mean, this is a prescription drug hurricane that blows into every single community across the Commonwealth and across the country.
I can put it even simpler. More people died last year of opiate, of overdose than died in the entire Vietnam War. Wow. It's now the number one killer of people under 50. All people. More than suicide, more than car accidents, more than murder, more than cancer, you name it. It's the number one cause of death for people under 50 in the United States. And that's squarely on Purdue Pharma, in my opinion.
It's on newsstands everywhere,
yes,
if I'm correct. Boston Magazine, the October
issue. So get it. While it's hot, as they say, for the next couple of weeks on your newsstands, and it'll be made available online next week.
And quick healing to you.
Yes, quick healing to me. I appreciate it.
Quick. And any projects that you got in the pipeline?
As I said, Dave and I are working on a dual project. I'm, still working on and getting the research done with this elephant conservationist story that we talked about the last time I was on. But a man who was fighting to protect the African elephant from extinction against the poaching
dwindling
syndicates.
Rapidly.
Yes, exactly. He was assassinated for his work.
Wow.
And I'm working to bring that story to readers all over the world.
Wow. Dave, what are you working on?
Well, right now my focus is finding this next book for Casey and I to do together. And then, we've got a few ideas. We've got some movie stuff in the pipeline, too. We're still working on the movie project for Frady's, the Pete Frady story, and that's getting close. And we're trying to build this company together, Casey and I, to keep bringing these stories to light. And we're also trying to turn this Peter Marciano story into a documentary. We think it's perfect for, a 30-minute or, maybe even an hour documentary.
Wow.
So we'll keep you posted on that.
And I can't let you go without at least a little bit of something on the sports side. How are the Canadians going to do compared to the Bruins this year?
They're not in good shape, Kevin. They're I'm focused on the Patriots right now. Let's just leave it at that.
All right.
And BC, but I'm really troubled by BC's football. They came out like gangbusters, and now they're like kind of sputtering. So
that was sort of a Belichick answer there, wasn't it? I'm focused on football.
I'm in football mode right now.
Well, again, but that begs the question: how does this all end for the Patriots? Anytime anybody ever asks me, as we're doing book talks or signings, what happens after this year? Who leaves? You know, I...
It's a big question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm predicting that Belichick will walk away Super Bowl or not Super Bowl. Kraft is staying. Brady is staying. Look, it only took 8 years for the Beatles to break up. Now, it's taken... This is going into the 19th season for the Patriots. The question is, how does it end? You know, is this season Abbey Road or, you know, is it Let It Be?
Linda Holiday becomes Yoko Ono.
Wow.
Wow.
Well,
or but, Alex Guerrero.
Well, I mean,
would be a better Yoko in this case.
Josh McDaniels.
Well, I have to jump in and say, you know, they don't look that bad for getting rid of Garoppolo right now.
I know. Well, how's Jimmy doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so. And you know, Brady doesn't look too shabby. You know, I mean, the guy, I don't know what's going on there, but he's as good as he's ever been. So
but he is overthrowing. I mean, you can see some rust on him this season as opposed.
Yeah, he's missing some throws.
He's 41.
You
don't know how much of that is these guys not running the right routes, though. That's it's 50-50.
Well, guys, I want to thank you both for coming in. Well,
thank you,
Dave,
for having us, Kevin.
Absolutely. Don't forget George's, or I'll take Cape Cod Cafe if you want to.
All right. Well,
bring it next
why don't we broadcast live from George's?
Ooh. Are we going to have a conversation about that? I'm all for that.
I love it.
I'll be there.
I'm all for that. You get Hank Tagliola to come on.
that would be fun radio right there.
All right, listen.
All right, guys.
Thank you so much. Here he is, Dave Wedge, Casey Sherman. As always, my friend, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us again.
And we'll have you... maybe we'll have you back in a month or two.
Yeah.
We'll have you. You have always have great updates.
Appreciate it.
We're going to step aside. When we come back, we'll talk a little about protect, serve, and care. Ganubi Rito and the MVP coming up next here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Let's see, what can I say about Brennan's? We have large walk-in humidors. I'm not sure if I can tell you what's inside, but I know they're stocked from the floor to the ceiling. We sell tobacco. I know I can say tobacco. That's about all I'll say about that. We sell pipes, lighters, and accessories. Don't think I can say what they're used for, but I know we sell them. Of course we have a friendly, knowledgeable staff. But only if you remembered your ID. I know I can say that. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Avalese, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Avalese and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
I'm District Attorney Tim Cruz, and I'm here today with my friend Mary Vaca.
I have seen firsthand how Tim Cruz and his office work to help people that have been hurt and victimized by bad actors and scam artists. The Klempenkava Triad is a partnership between our District Attorney Tim Cruz, Sheriff Joe McDonald, and our Council on Aging.
Our seniors are our greatest generation. I created the Senior Protection Team to protect them from people who would hurt them, not just physically, but monetarily.
A message from District Attorney Tim Cruz.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
All right. Big thank you to Casey Sherman, Dave Wedge. Hey, you get an autographed copy of their the October issue of Boston Magazine. The article they wrote in regards to Peter Marciano and the Marciano family dealing with addiction.
Oh, fortunate circumstances.
Absolutely. That voice, that talented voice, is Newbertson Rateau. Only I can call him.
You're the only person I call you by my government.
By what?
You're the only person that calls him by my government name.
Your mother doesn't call you Newbert, so
no.
She's mad at you?
She calls me Newbie.
Everybody calls me Newbie.
This is a little more stern, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Newbie?
Yeah.
She doesn't use a middle name?
I don't have a middle name.
This is Brian Cook. Brian Cook is a very methodical guy when it comes to talking about stuff. He's almost like Chris DiOrio.
Oh, wow. Almost. Okay. I mean, we can't get quite close to Chris, though. I mean, that's a whole other level here.
Chris, of course, in Uganda right now.
Yes, he is.
Really? Doing great work.
He'll be back for the premiere. He's doing some pretty cool stuff. Yeah. I mean, dynamite stuff.
We'll have him on the show. Maybe I'll have you in. Maybe you'll lure the MVP. Newbie Rito, who's here, along with his co-director, co-producer. Are you co-executive producer as well?
Yeah.
He's called the MVP. Okay?
Self-proclaimed. He gave himself that name.
Oh, no, I did not.
Shouldn't someone else give you
MVP?
That name? It's not self-proclaimed, man.
Listen. You put it out there, people pick it up.
Can I be called His Excellency?
It doesn't work like that.
A little late on that.
Okay.
A little late on that. Will Madero, as is these two gentlemen, are, they're almost like Loggins and Messina. You get that? Like a writing team. These guys go out, and they are award-winning documentarians. Hear me now. And their latest project, about to hit the theater. Have you got your tickets? I think there's less than 25 left.
I think there's like three left. We might sell it by the end of the show.
Do you want a picture of me holding a couple? Because like everybody on the South Shore, you got a picture. You're like, Joe got his.
He got everybody but you.
Everybody but me.
You got the press pass. You don't need it. You got the press pass, all right? You don't need a ticket.
I got to get
you're
a little visual love.
You know, you got the press pass.
Listen, who pimps you more than you?
One and only than Kevin Tachi. Come on.
Who pimps you more than you?
I mean, the K to the Tachi.
Protect, serve, and care. I was fortunate enough. I've seen all of Newbie's productions, right? Because it's Newbie Productions. Mm-hmm. The work that you two gentlemen have done. Where would you rank this in all of the things that you have produced? Because you've touched on a lot of sensitive issues. Things that needed to be discussed. Fatherhood, gun violence, stuff like that.
Where you put it, I'd say, I always say the last project I think is the best one. I think this is the best and most powerful project.
I think in terms of production, that is what we always strive for. We want the latest project to show that we've grown since the last one. And it's a big issue. I think it's definitely up to one of our issues. Personally, I think fatherhood is still my favorite one. I think that's just a big issue that never gets talked about, but it's up there as well.
And just so Brian, Mr. Cook, who is here in on this conversation, tell us what Protect, Serve, and Care. What is this? What when you set out to start capturing footage, doing your interviews, weaving your footage, telling your tale? What was the idea behind this film?
Well, you know, a lot of times we have kind of the same form for all of our documentaries. We kind of gather the material, right? Gather both sides and put it all out there. And you make the decision about what side you think, you know, is right or wrong per se. Or, you know, we don't really necessarily want to pick a side. We just want to tell every side and tell the truth.
Okay. But what was this one about?
I think with this one, we've been working on this documentary now for about 2 years, and I think about 2 years ago is when there was a lot of innocent blacks being killed, specifically that summer. I believe that was Eric Garner, that was Tamia Rice, that was there was a few other ones. There was one in Boston as well, Mike Brown. So you know, a lot of it was happening at the time, and we were just and just like with every other issue. You know, it's like, this is happening around us. Why is this happening so much? You know, why aren't people giving this enough coverage? So we set out to kind of investigate, because that's what we do. We want to see where's the discord? Why is this happening? You know, so I think that's where it started. That was a crazy year. I feel like 2016 was.
You know, the irony is, we started filming, I didn't even say by accident before that, because we did a film on gun culture. So we went to a lot of like protests and rallies. So even a lot of that footage from the one we did on gun culture, which was, I mean, that was 4 years ago. Mm. You know, we still use, it's still relevant for this documentary. I mean, that's how real long the issue is gone.
I found So I knew you and I had a conversation. You're like, check this out. Give me your thoughts on this. This is the finished product. Tell me if you felt that this was balanced. Was there balance to this? Was the idea for it to be balanced?
That was the idea.
Okay.
But, we ran into some obstacle courses.
Really?
Yeah.
What were the obstacle courses?
I think just trying to go out there and get the story, it's harder for police. I think during the course of us making the documentary, we realized that it's harder for police to give up as much information as you'd want them to. So, you know, we were trying to get a lot of the police out as well, because there is, you know, some people fear police officer necessarily, and you know, we wanted to get both sides, and just trying to set up events with them, or trying to talk about past events that have happened. It's just hard to get in them, you know. They don't really talk, they don't budge. So it was
harder.
What
do you think that is? Why do you feel that there's a lack of a dialogue with between the police? In one part of your documentary, there was an individual, it was a DJ down in Providence,
mm-hmm.
who said, you know what, if you don't know my mom, you know my aunt, why do I want to know you? If you don't know me, why do I want to know you? I mean, is the key to that the key to having good relations between the police and the public to have a little community mixed in there somewhere?
I think a lot of times people get mixed up. Community policeman, community service. And we try to kind of really differentiate the two in the documentary. Community service is I'm doing a basketball tournament. I'm passing out Frisbees and water bottles. Community policing is I'm actually going to be in the hood and introduce myself to the store owners. Introducing myself to maybe some people that, you know, might be in some, you know, tough areas. Maybe some gangs or whatever. Really introduce and say, hey, I'm here. I'm not here to arrest you. I'm just here to introduce myself to help you. That's policing. And I think it's flipped now to community service, which I think is an issue, because it doesn't solve the problem.
You know, Mr. Cook.
You raise a number of interesting questions, but the question that keeps eating at me, and I'm wondering if you guys, through your work, found any way to unearth this, as whether there's an alternative to a lethal confrontation. Is there an opportunity for either a taser, a conversation, some kind of restraint? It just seems that a young black man having an argument with a police officer should not end with one person being dead. I had a policeman say to me recently, when I had a confrontation with a police officer, he said, remember one thing, when you have a fight with a policeman, only one of you is carrying a gun. It scared the heck out of me. And I'm not a 17-year-old kid from the hood who has to worry. So the question becomes, we look at the number of deaths across the country on these engagements. We have no idea how many near deaths occurred because no one talks about the beatings or other things. But in these situations that you've seen, does it get so bad that the only way to stop the situation is to kill someone?
I mean, I think it's tough. So one of the things we were unfortunately not able to get was a little simulation called the shoot, don't shoot simulation. And it pretty much, it's a simulation that police officers have to go through to show the split second decision making it takes before an incident has to get to the point where they have to pull out a gun. And I just think that it's tough, because in a lot of situations that we do see online, the camera is from different angles. You know, it's going to catch. You can manipulate an angle. You can manipulate footage.
Yep.
So we're seeing only half the story sometimes. But obviously, I'm a minority, so you know it happens a lot. So, and I see that side as well. And I think a lot of times it isn't necessary to pull out a gun. Obviously, I don't think anybody's life deserves to be taken, especially from a police officer. But at the same time, there are instances that we don't know of where. We don't know what happened before that situation, how the police officer approached them, and how they reacted where the police ended up shooting them. You know, because a lot of times when we get pulled over, we get confrontational. We react in a way that's not according to how we should be acting in that situation. And I'm not saying that's right, but
if I could kind of interject here, and this is something that you and I had chatted a little bit about, a retired Brooklyn detective
Graham Weatherspoon.
Love that guy. I love that guy. And I think he aptly said it at one point in your film, that when you have somebody who is, and if I'm quoting the wrong individual, please correct me.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody is testing your manhood, you know, you're an individual and, you know, you want respect. But somebody who has a badge, just because you have a badge doesn't mean that you can just disrespect me. And some people, respect is everything. And if you disrespect them, well, then, it doesn't matter if you have a gun or a badge. I'm gonna tell you how I feel. And and so maybe respect is something that needs to be an ingredient that is added to this, no?
I agree. And I think one thing, you know, we always talk about the police. What do the police need to do? Community policing is that's two sides. Mm. What does the community need to do? And if we can't say the police need to do this, that, and the other, and not point a finger back at the community. You know, it's a hard conversation to have, but, you know, certainly a lot of these situations, and they did not deserve to die. But they were, a lot of these situations were resisting arrest, not listening, okay? And one of the officers said in the documentary, they're not paid to make a decision after a bullet goes into them, police officers. So, you know, I think there needs to be some give and take on both sides in terms of what's going on. I mean, Eric Garner, horrible situation. He should not have been choked and killed, but he was resisting arrest. He was resisting arrest. And people need to acknowledge that.
Another question, if you don't mind, but you guys went into this with a certain mindset. Did you come out of it with a different mindset? I would think as two young African-American men, you're living in a world where police doesn't necessarily mean my friend. But it sounds like you're being pretty balanced in your conversation about what happens out there and what we know and what we don't know, and you're not coming down on they're all wrong or we're all right. Did seeing the stress that police officers are under or the split-second decisions change your view of the world?
There's a question. I think it's tough because I don't think it comes down to one person. Like, it's not like these are individual. They're happening across the country.
Mm.
So it's bigger than just one police officer or one police station. I think it's a system. Like, I think, for example, I think there probably isn't like some type of the police probably don't go to some training that acclimates them with the local community. Like, I don't think there are things being implemented to train police officers properly in terms of mentally. A lot of police officers are people that are coming home from war that do suffer PTSD. They don't know that, and they go straight into it. They have first priority in becoming a police officer. And these are people that have been trained to shoot first in combat, and they become police officers when they come home. That's a lot of police officers. I don't think we look at numbers like that. So I just think it's bigger than just individuals. It's tough. Personally, I just feel like there's an injustice happening, and we're just doing our best to raise light to it. I don't know what the right answer is. I can't tell you that.
But I think it's terrific that you are shining the light on it, because there was a point in time where our police force, our first responders, didn't get the respect they deserved. And then after 9/11, there was a huge shift, and then it almost became, we don't have to abide by the same rules as everybody else because we're protecting you.
Mm-hmm.
This tragedy in Weymouth with a police officer.
That was Sergeant Chestnut.
Yep. It was a classic case of, did we need to have a police officer with his gun in that neighborhood? That is the most idyllic neighborhood in the whole town. That shouldn't have happened. The officer who lost his life in Kingston, Charbonnier, young guy that I taught when he was at New England Law School, people don't die at exit 9 on Route 3 South.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. So I think there's a feeling, don't let anyone near you, don't let anyone near your gun, someone's going to take your gun. So there's almost a standoffishness. I mean, we don't want our police officers to be customer service officers or, you know, the welcome wagon.
Yeah.
But on the same token, what you talk about community policing, when I was a kid, there was a cop on the beat in Columbian Square in South Weymouth. You knew you did not do anything wrong when Officer Barry was walking through town. And that sort of just set a message. Then all of a sudden there became this distance between the local police and the local people, where even adults and community activists had to be afraid. And we need to come back a little bit to the point where we see a police officer and we think, that's good. You know, I'm safe. Mm. Versus, oh my God, what am I going to get arrested for this
time?
Yeah,
sure. And I think it's interesting in the doc that there's a moment where you actually have a camera in a classroom. You ask these young minds, what do you think of police? Are they good or are they bad? And they had to hesitate. They had to think. And you did have a couple that put their hands up for bad. But you did have a couple of youngsters that all said they wanted to be police officers.
Right.
Which wasn't a bad thing. And you had, I got to say, you also had some some excellent folks who were including, you know, Boston's first African-American.
Willie Gross.
You know, this is before he was given that title. And he was very frank. And he talked about the meaning of, you know, doing his job and how he does it. And also being somebody who's also seen as a traitor to some people because he wants to make a difference. What are you joining them for?
Right. I think Chief Gross, well, Commissioner Gross now.
Commissioner Gross.
Right. Does a really good job in terms of, you know, playing the role of, listen, I'm an officer, but I'm also an athlete. And I just want to give a shout out to Chief Gross. I'm sorry, Commissioner Gross.
I'm going to send this to him.
Yeah, because he...
You get your name right.
He actually should be there for the premiere, too, which is exciting. Commissioner Gross was one of the first officers, the first, to really step up and say, I'll be a part of this documentary. Yeah. And it's huge because we needed that credibility to go to, you know, some of these high-profile cases around the country, saying, you know, we got some names here. So we had Chief Gross and also Kati Diallo, which is the mother of Amadou Diallo. Those two people, we were able to put them into a trailer, give us the credibility to go see Oscar Grant's mother in Oakland, which was part of the movie Fruitvale Station, go to Baltimore, and really fundraise. I mean, it really was huge that those two people really gave us credibility and spark plug and really started an avalanche.
What's your process of weaving your footage together, whether it's with B-roll, whether it's to tell the story, how you lay out your storyboard? What's that process like?
I'd say, you know, whenever we pick an issue, we always, how are we going to start it? You know, how are we going to get there? And in the end,
how we finish it, though.
I was going to say, we always start with, like, we're like, all right, it's going to go this way. And then but Newbie does a good job of keeping that original, the paper, and then we just keep adding it throughout the years.
We don't do a storyboard. It's a white poster board.
And it's crazy just how out of order a movie can be, because sometimes you have to do something. You kind of have to sometimes work backwards, because you know how you want it to end,
sure.
And then you start there sometimes, and then once you start there, you're like, okay, well, I can go here from there. And then you already have a beat. You have like a kind of how you want to go from the beginning. You got a beginning, then you start putting together the middle.
And the cool part is there's things like a Graham Witherspoon that we don't expect. That kind of like, okay, well, we got to go this way. He's a New York
City
detective.
I agree with you. He was my favorite one.
Love him. He was frank. I even like the part where he was talking about, you know, we don't take prisoners to McDonald's. Take them to a restaurant. But they ain't acting right with a spoon and a fork. Let them know about it.
Kevin, I have to tell you, I'm sitting here. I had no idea what to expect.
You can buy a ticket.
Brian,
get on board.
I want to get a ticket.
There's only three left.
Well, I'm sitting here and I'm finding myself, and I look at the iPhone and I think, has that kind of technology and all the social media kind of destroyed this generation?
No.
And then I meet two guys like this and I find myself saying, oh my God. They are taking media. This is what Kanye was talking about the other day. They are taking media and they're exporting it to the world. Mm-hmm. And they're changing minds and changing opinions by manipulating something they know better than anybody, which is media. And how do we get to the next generation? And if documentaries, because that's what kids are watching on Netflix and on various things on TV, sure. They're watching these things and it is changing minds and attitudes. And I really commend you guys. I think it is so exciting.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
To know that this is how you've decided to, you know, move your lives and move other people and take your education and your passion, because that is the key to everything. We talk about politics. We talk about things. If people don't have the passion and aren't willing to make that commitment, nothing's going to happen. So, you know, props to you guys, if that's the right term, because it's really impressive.
In Newbie Rattel, when Will the MVP Madero here.
Newbie His Excellency Rattel.
We'll talk about that later.
It probably one of the last few things that I will ask you, and that is how important was it to be make sure you mixed some of the local folk that you know and you knew what their expertise was to be able to help you, and even getting upcoming stars like you know the Boston superintendent and the newly minted congresswoman,
Ayanna Pressley. Well, some of that's just luck. I'm gonna be honest with you. I mean, the commissioner thing, that was luck.
Yeah,
I mean,
it definitely was.
Ayanna Pressley, I mean,
well, maybe it was a vision. Maybe
them putting them in their documentary is what got him the superintendent's job.
Yeah, but it hasn't.
Darn. Okay,
it hasn't aired yet.
you know who I'd love to be in this documentary in Rest of Soul he Camp? I thought, had he been alive, would have been huge, would have been Chief Hayden. You know, we've had some stories on Chief Hayden. We've actually been on a high-speed chase with him.
That was crazy.
And that kind of changed my perspective on policing, too. Is Chief Hayden actually one of Chief Gross's mentors, Commissioner Gross's mentor.
Wow.
So, shout out to Chief Hayden. Rest in peace. Shout out to this whole family.
Right. This is a dude, tough dude. He was a tough dude.
Yeah. He really was.
Like his final day, like riding a bike.
Yeah. I was like, this dude is wild.
Busted up. But he was okay. He's like, it's a scratch.
Yeah.
Rub some dirt on it. I'll be fine. Tell folks where this is going to be showing.
It's going to be showing, and we have 3 tickets left. So it's going to be sold out probably by the end of this sentence. But November 14th, Dedham Showcase Cinema. Dedham Showcase Cinema, November 14th. We're looking to do another showing, hopefully. Probably in February, we're looking at a few universities and colleges. So we'll do a multiple show.
Are you going to enter this in any film festivals or anything? Is that on the docket?
That's always the plan. You know, see where we can get it into. See how many people we can get to look at it. Distributors, the whole 9 yards.
But we've done we will talk about this. We're going to really try to push this on our own. I think you know we have the ability to really make some noise if we do this on it. So we're going to do the festivals, but we're going to do some creative stuff too.
Folks want to find out more about some of your production, some of your past work, and maybe if you do get another theater showing or two?
NubiProductions.com, NubiProductions.com. We will have more screenings, definitely more. And those announcements will come on the website.
Is there going to be an MVP tab too?
Yes, that's actually, yeah. Every,
hook them up.
It's going to get all my, it's gonna have
everything
all my
on MVP.
Shots.
How's your sister doing?
She's doing good.
Dancing.
She's doing good. B-City reps. B-City reps. Visit in Brockton.
That's right.
She's also... Nubi's just surrounded by talent.
Surrounded? Because she made it on ABDC.
She's the true celebrity.
America's best dance crew.
She's a real celebrity. Oh. I'm like the JV team.
Guys, I got to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And I'm glad you finally got the MVP here.
Finally.
I found a break in my schedule.
We'll look forward to that showing.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
I'll be there. And always have the support. We are going to step aside. Brian Cook, how can I forget you? You brought the cookies.
This was terrific. Really had a great time.
Appreciate you. Thank you for coming in and hanging out, and thanks to all of our guests this evening. That's all the Monday Night Talk that we have. Up next, South Shore Live, Stan and the Gang, waiting in the wings. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a good night. Fine.